Welcome to the HMO Experience, the UK's only HMO-focused property podcast, where every Monday, Matt, Jamie and Steve will inform and inspire you about everything to do with HMOs, rent to rent, and how to set up and grow a successful HMO business, whether you're just starting out or you're already on your way.
Hi guys, I'm Matt Harris and welcome to the HMO Experience. This is episode 9 and where we're going to be covering off putting in an offer and negotiation, both from a buying perspective and from a rent-to-rent perspective. I'm going to introduce you to my co-host. Welcome, Jamie.
Hi, everyone.
And Steve.
Good afternoon.
So in episode 7 and 8, we covered off carrying out viewings from both a rent-to-rent perspective and from a buying perspective. So I think as a natural progression, we covered workflow, I think, which was in episode 5 of the HMO Experience. So as a natural progression, following on from a viewing, you found a property that's suitable, it ticks all your boxes, whether it's from a rent-to-rent perspective or from a buying perspective. So now it's time to put in an offer. And I guess let's cover off from a buying perspective first, because I think there's it's probably a bit more of a straightforward process rather than the rent-to-rent perspective. So Jamie, would you like to give us a bit of an insight as to what that looks like?
Sure. I'll tell you what not to do, first of all.
Okay, nice.
Don't put a punt in, because putting in something, an offer to go and buy a property when you don't really know the exact numbers, I've seen from experience in the early days of buying a singlet before I knew this stuff, but also loads of people I see on social media losing a lot of money by just putting in a prospective punt, thinking they know what the value is, thinking they know what the end value is if they're going to be buying a property to convert to an HMO and then refinance it. So here's what you should do.
Nice.
You've got to do the numbers. I'm not a numbers person, but you need to have some sort of deal analysis done on every property you look at. You do not put any estimates or guesstimates into the numbers. You've got to put exact numbers in. So what do those numbers include? In the last episode, we talked about if you're going to be buying a property, then there's going to be a refurb cost, depending on if you're doing a mini-mo, like a small HMO conversion, or you're doing a much more extensive 3 to 5, 6, 7, for example, bed conversion. Mm. The prices are going to be different, and you need to know what those prices are. You also need to know in your deal analysis what the purchase costs are going to be. So this obviously includes stamp duty or the brokerage fees if you're using a broker to raise finance, what the cost of finance is going to be, what your conveyancing and legal fees are going to be. All your costs need to be in there.
Mm.
Then, once you know what your profit benchmark is going to be, now this might be a case of how much equity you want to make on every property, once you've done the refurbishment, or it might be that plus a combination of how much net income you're going to make from that property. If that property, according to your numbers and your deal analysis, at the asking price, fits your criteria, that's what you put the offer in at.
Nice.
You put the offer in at whatever the numbers tell you. If, however, that you've realised that even if you put the offer in at asking price, you're still quite a way away from your end goal, i.e. your net income figure or the equity you want to make in that property from doing the refurb and then refinancing it, then that's where you start negotiating and that's the next step.
Nice.
And what I would always, always recommend is know your numbers first of all, then put an offer in writing to your estate agent or if you're buying directly to the landlord themselves, and justify the offer.
Sure.
Explain why you've put it in, because typically it's going to be a bit lower than what they expect or what they want or what they advertise it for.
Mm.
But justify what it is and why you're putting it in. So that's the first step.
So what sort of things would you take into account when trying to justify?
So this is where your knowledge or experience, either that you've got yourself or via your builder, comes into play. So for example, an estate agent or a landlord will have probably less knowledge of how much things cost to refurbish. So for example, they might think that a new kitchen, new bathroom might cost £25,000 or £35,000.
Yeah.
They might think that putting in ensuite bathrooms, if that's what you're going to be doing, is going to cost £10,000 per room.
Yeah.
Now, if you've done your deal analysis correctly, you know what the actual costs are.
Yeah.
And then you can then talk about what your plans are with the property and justify the refurbishment.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't really have much understanding about what those costs are, they might assume or you can inflate or lead them to believe that those costs will be a lot higher. Therefore, that justifies a lower offer.
Okay. And if you're, I'm sure, you know, as part of your investment strategy, you've come across probably a more sophisticated landlords, for want of a better expression. So in that sort of instance, I guess you need to be a little bit more nuanced in terms of your negotiation. So what type of things have you historically sort of covered off in that respect?
Sometimes in those instances, it's more to do with the circumstances that the owner of the property is in.
Sure.
For example, one of the properties I bought not so long ago was a three-bedroom terrace house up in Coventry. I converted it into a five-bed, five-on-suite property. But the issue wasn't the purchase price.
Yeah.
The issue was that property was being bought from probate, and the unfortunately, the family were living a long, long way away from the property. They didn't really want to get involved. They weren't really sure what they wanted to do with the property. Yeah. It had been on the market for over a year. So then I used the benefit of me acting quickly to resolve this potential problem, as they saw it, I'm not selling the property, to my advantage. So price wasn't necessarily an issue there. Okay. It was more to do with what was the problem and how could I solve it. And I think in negotiation, knowing who you are dealing with, and this is where your estate agent's key, because you can ask them to give you information, ask questions with them to find the circumstances about, you know, the, what's the buyer's situation. Sorry, what's the seller's situation, rather, will definitely help. So not just on price.
Yeah.
It's about what problem they've got, how you can solve it.
Sure.
So, yeah, definitely think about that too.
Okay, cool. Steve, from your perspective, I guess you're obviously a lot more process-focused and, I guess, more granular in terms of numbers. What particular things do you generally take into account when preparing an offer and as part of the negotiation as well?
For buying?
Yeah.
So for me, it's the old adage of smoke mirrors and weird dancing, in the sense that when you put your offer in, the offer is never going to be the first one that's going to be accepted.
Sure.
So you may as well have a bit of fun with that, because that's not going to go anywhere. And then it's working out where you ideally would like to be, which becomes your second offer position. And then what is your walkaway point?
Okay.
So as Jamie says, everything is numbers driven. And if you've got an Excel spreadsheet or however you decide to do that, just plugging in different numbers will show different outcomes.
Yeah.
So the final offer price is the absolute maximum that I'm prepared to pay. And as Jamie said, there are other ways of being able to renegotiate once that price has been accepted. So once you then start to get the surveyors on board, and if they start to pick up bits and pieces, you can start chipping the price away. And if you can start chipping it towards where your ideal position is, so let's say, for example, that my walkaway point or the maximum I'm prepared to pay is 100,000, but my first offer might be 90,000, let's say. My ideal position would be 95,000, because that's where it ideally works. Then start to chip down from that 100,000 down to the 95, if you can do it. Now, the vendor might say sod off, and he's got every right to do that. But the fact that you're probably 50% to 70% away along the purchase process means that in order for him to start the whole process again, to potentially have the same conversations again, is not appealing to him. So using that as leverage also I found works well.
Yeah.
So that's how I tend to do that.
Yeah, nice. And I guess getting the offer across to the agent and then keeping the dialogue open is all naturally part of that process, right?
Communication is key. As soon as people don't hear from each other, they assume you're not interested or you're not that serious about it, or they're assuming you're going to pull out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's key to keep talking.
Yeah. And as part of that communication, I'm just reminding of an instance where Jamie and I were looking to purchase a property in Bedford. And we put an offer in via the agent, and the vendor specifically didn't want to sell to us because we were investors. Now, when you sort of think about the rationale behind that, you sort of, well, why would that ever happen? Well, he'd lived there for like 25 years. He saw this as a family home. This was the place where he had his children had grown up, and he had lots of fond memories. and suddenly two Herberts are coming along and going to turn his house into an HMO, which we duly explained that that's what we're going to do. So be mindful of when you're putting your offers in. If you show too much of your hand, sometimes that may work against you, and therefore only revealing what's strictly necessary. Now, your agent will probably know what you want to do with it, but in terms of the vendor, our experience is that if we are too upfront and too honest, sometimes that works against us.
Okay, nice. So I guess, is there anything else that you feel needs to be taken into account from a buying perspective as part of the offer and negotiation process?
Sure. One thing I would definitely say, because we hear this a lot, we see it a lot on social media, is that people often say when you're buying property, try and get 25% below market value property. Now, let's face it, in a rising market, it's very, very difficult to get, let's just say it's £100,000 asking price, to put in an offer that gets accepted at £75,000. Yeah. It's difficult. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's difficult. So, the beauty about HMOs, especially if you're looking to buy them like we do, is you can add value. Sure. So, with your deal analysis, if the asking price is £100,000, for example, and yet you know on your deal analysis that even if you paid that asking price, you can add X amount of value on top of that and still make the net income that you need from that property, then so be it.
Sure.
You can add value. You have to buy below market value, which is one of the reasons why we've been quite prolific about buying HMOs.
Nice.
Because you can add value on top. Refinance that out if you've got a good power team, and we'll cover power teams and refinancing in another HMO experience episode. But knowing the numbers and knowing the power of what you can and what you can't offer, even if it's at asking price, is really key.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess a cheeky question to ask in terms of your deal analysis, do you have a standard template that you follow that might be shareable to listeners, to watchers?
Absolutely, but obviously we put the caveat on that buyer beware.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Everyone has to make sure that the numbers stack for them. We don't particularly want people contacting saying, "Oh, you was out by 50 grand."
There's a template for them to use, right? They need to plug in the numbers. So that's
exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be useful. We've got two templates. One is from a rent-to-rent HMO perspective when analysing deals, and the second is obviously from a buyer point of view.
Nice. That's a nice little segue into going into having a chat about offering and negotiation on rent-to-rent deals. So, you know, what has your general experience been when putting forward offers after you've had a successful viewing? Tell us highlights, lowlights.
On rent-to-rent?
Yeah.
So, I think we've been quite lucky because we speak with a lot of people who we train on setting up HMO management companies, or rent-to-rent as it's called. And we haven't had some of the experiences that some of our mentees have.
Sure.
And the number one, I would say, challenge that people have when negotiating is not actually getting to the negotiation.
Mm.
It's where the numbers, and I'm sure lots of the listeners who have tried rent-to-rent in the past have had this one, whereby they see a property online, it's marketed for $2,800.
Yeah.
They've done their deal analysis, and the most they can offer is $1,900, for example. So how do you negotiate from $2,800 down to $1,900?
Yeah.
Well, the answer is you can't, because the numbers are just too far apart. Unless you are like a demon negotiator, and you do that for a living, it's going to be like releasing hostages from banks and stuff like that, or using some sort of Paul McKenna mind trick.
Look into my eyes.
Yeah.
Bend spoons.
Yeah. Why are you waving a watch in front of me? It's kind of challenging, but it's not challenging if you understand the sort of mechanics, because that 2,800 that is being advertised on Rightmove isn't the same number as the 1,900 that you can offer if you want to take that property on under management.
Mm.
Because the 2,800 is actually the gross rent number.
Sure.
And when you start to chip away the electric bills, the gas bills, the cleaning bills, the water bills, the Wi-Fi bills, the voids, all that type of stuff, maintenance spend, then you start to bring that 2,800 down to, say, 2,100.
Yeah.
Now you're in a lot better territory in terms of being able to negotiate from 1,900 to 2,100. And that's when you start to get creative.
Yeah.
So what are some of the creative elements to the negotiation? Well, the first one is obviously making sure you know what your walk-away number is, and we've talked about that in the past. And the way that we calculate on the rent-to-rent deal analyzer is in three stages. So the first is that we understand what our income is.
Yeah.
The second stage is we put in or know what our minimum deal value is. And for us, in the previous episode, we said it was 500. I think you said it was sort of like
800.
Yeah. So you take your profit out. Then you take your costs out,
yeah,
and then whatever's left is the maximum that you can offer.
Yeah.
So in an ideal world, you can do one of two things. You can either go straight in and say, this is the maximum I can offer.
Yeah.
But the agent will probably think you're not being truthful and therefore will try and negotiate. Mm. Or you try and drop your landlord payment down a couple of hundred quid and then you give that away as a free trade. But negotiation in its essence means that if I give something, I expect something back in return.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to put my offer in at, say, maximum I can offer is 1,700, but my deal analyzer shows me I can actually go up to 1,900.
Mm.
So if I start to give away £200 extra a month to the landlord, which is something that I want to earn back, then I need to start thinking about, well, what else can I add on that's going to help me out? So it might be, for example, some redecorating.
Yeah.
Or it might be, for example, a rent-free period. Or it might be, for example, that you get the landlord to put up a stud wall or whatever it is, depending on the type of the property, so that it actually balances out and that you you come away with an equitable agreement. So on the one that we've recently looked at, where we're taking over the property with the four customers, if you listened to a previous episode, we told you all about that. The landlord wanted 975.
Yeah.
So when we did the numbers, our first response was, well, we can't afford 975. And he said, so what can you afford? And he said, well, 900 works for us, and here's the reasons why. He said, well, I can't go from 975 down to 900. It's just too much.
Yeah.
So we said, okay, so if we were to take it to, 940. Now, that was a figure I already knew. Because if it's more than 940, I can't do the deal.
Sure.
We said, well, if we went to 940, how would you feel about putting in a new shower and changing the shower screen? Because it was all furred and manky and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, I could do that. So it was a small win for us because that was a job that we knew that we had to get done. I knew that in order to get a new shower screen and to get it fitted is probably going to cost me about 150-200 quid.
Sure.
So what I've actually given away is 480 quid because I've given him 40 quid.
Yeah.
But what I've actually got back is another couple of hundred quid. Mm. So I'm only a couple of hundred quid down. But because we can start to walk up the rents, and we'll do another episode on how to walk up the rents, we knew that deal over a period of 6 months would hit our minimum deal value.
Nice.
So it's all about going into that negotiation, understanding what you can offer.
Yeah.
Then working out where your ideal position is.
Mm.
And then walking back up to what your maximum, or no more than your maximum, but extracting some concessions in return so that it becomes an equitable relationship. If you constantly give and don't ask back, then if you've got a rent review period in your contract, guess which way that's going to go?
Yeah.
It's only going to go one way. And also, exactly. And also, landlords, or most landlords that I know, are commercially savvy individuals.
Yeah.
And they will respect you for negotiating.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a bit of a wet blanket and you just lay down and think either it's no deal or there's no way I can offer that, then in my humble opinion, you don't deserve to be in business. Yeah. It's as simple as that.
I was a wet blanket on the first deal. Yeah. The agent said, this is the number. And I said, okay, this is the number then. And there's no negotiation. Yeah.
And two of our mentees did exactly that. Unfortunately, they got themselves into a situation whereby a few minor changes to the circumstances of that property meant they're actually subsidizing it as opposed to making money from it. So you've got to be really careful.
Yeah.
Our first deal took us 6 months to negotiate.
Really?
3 months of which the guy was in India, but that's all part of the time frame.
Yeah.
But in essence, it took us 3 months whereby our first customer, I think we've mentioned on previous podcasts, the wonderful Mr. Bat. So if you're listening, Mr. Bat, big up.
Thank you.
We love you to bits.
You're a fan. We're a fan of you.
And we've given away all our secrets. I hope you're not listening.
Yeah. Don't listen, Mr. Bat.
So he wanted $16.50 and we ended up negotiating at $12.50 and he refurbished his property.
Yeah.
So it's all about knowing what it is that you can live with in terms of a deal commercially, where your walk away point is, and that's super important. But then work out what I call free trades. So what's something that I can give away, but get something back that's either equal or of more magnitude in terms of value.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Can I give an example of that perceived value giveaway? Yeah. So as you might have heard from a previous episode, if not, we'll do another one in the future. We always provide, where we can, brand new furniture.
Mm.
Now, in the first few rent-to-rent HMOs, we used to buy those. Now we don't, now we lease the furniture. So the perceived value, the total value, if you were to buy that, could be £6,000, £7,000, £8,000 for a bigger property. So when we're speaking to a landlord or a letting agent to take on their rent-to-rent HMO, we can drop into conversation, well, if we put in £8,000 brand new furniture into this property, would you pay £8,000 for a refurb?
Yeah.
And there's no real cost to us because we're going to do it anyway.
Sure.
They don't know we're going to lease it, and then the rental profit will pay for the lease costs every month.
Yeah.
But it's a perceived high value that we are giving to their property. And so as Steve said, you gain something back in return.
Yeah.
It just makes life a lot easier.
Yeah, actually, that's a great point. I think I clearly have got lessons to learn in negotiation. Other than that first experience, I guess a couple of things that that we've done, especially when we were first starting off. So the first deal, like I said, just agreed to the price, whatever the agent told me. I was like, yeah, that's fine. And thankfully, it's worked out well. It's cool. It's our best performing property, which is great.
I think how better it would have
been. I know. But you know, the landlord is great. Kevin, if you're listening, hello, Kevin.
Big up, Kevin.
No, it's been great. He's been super on the ball in terms of getting any maintenance done, any repairs done. Mm. So the relationship has been worthwhile. And he's recently extended as well, which is great.
Cool.
I think the other thing, so a couple of stumbling blocks that I've had to overcome, which I'm sure you guys would have faced something similar when you first started off, was as you're a new business, aside from the referencing aspect, I think, you know, landlords and agents perceive you as, or have this preconception about rent-to-rent businesses, and, you know, they've had a previous bad experience where a company just ended up walking away from the property and the landlord lost a lot of money and that kind of thing. And so we had, on the second property that we took on, we had a landlord who was cautious, should I say, in terms of, she was happy to go ahead with a long-term arrangement, which was fine. But because there wasn't really any referencing to be done on the business, because we'd only been trading for about 4 months, what I proposed to her was, and this was, you know, backing myself and the opportunity to fill the house and make sure we kept it full, was over the first 12 months of the agreement, I said that if we default on any of the rent payment, then the landlord would have the right to terminate our agreement, and we would facilitate the exit and the checkout of any existing housemates. And within that 12-month period, And we'd also pay £1,000 towards her re-advertising the property and putting it back on the market.
Right.
Now, from a landlord's perspective, you know, she kind of thought, and I've had subsequent conversations with her about this, and she thought, look, you were prepared to back yourself in order to give me that opportunity and give me a little bit of security, you know, if I did need to kick you out and I need to remarket the property, which enabled us to get the deal over the line, and it was a good deal as well. And it's been a consistently performing property, which is great. The other thing which I came across recently, someone mentioned to me, and I've tried it on a current deal we're working on, was you need to differentiate yourself from other rent-to-rent operators.
Yeah, definitely.
So one thing that I put across on a current deal is offering 3 months rent up front, zero deposit, and in return asking the landlord to furnish the property throughout.
Yeah.
And, you know, stars must have been aligned, because there was zero, and I asked for a discounted rent as well. So I asked for about 8% below asking, because the numbers were still looking great, but now they're looking better. Right. And, you know, that offer was accepted without question. So it was nice to try a new approach, especially, you know, having not had as much success as I thought we were going to have throughout the year. You know, it's a numbers game.
Yeah.
Right? So I think trying a new approach, a different approach to make yourself stand out and make it a bit more of an attractive proposition to a landlord has helped us in that instance. And hopefully we'll get to close on that property before the end of the month.
That'd be great. I think you hit a really good point then, Matt, which is, as Steve said, you know, the tough negotiation does work, but what is the point in delivering a service, which is what rent-to-rent is? Rent-to-rent HMO is delivering a service via a letting agency or a landlord, if they feel bitter that you've actually screwed them down the price so much that it doesn't really work for them. If they feel like they've lost out, I can guarantee that'll be a very short arrangement. Yeah. If, however, you get to a situation where you know the numbers work for you and the agent or the landlord has got some perceived value too, and they're happy, then absolutely, you're going to be there. The chances are, as you mentioned, and we've had this countless times now, when it comes to renewal, the landlord or the letting agency are much more likely, if they believe they're getting benefit from working with you, to renew that proposition to rent out that property, which means long-term income for you too.
Yeah,
so negotiation is key, absolutely key. I think,
and it has to be a win-win, example. It needs to be a win-win for everyone. Otherwise, it'd be a tricky starting point. So then I think, you know, we've done the, we've put in the offer, we've got the negotiation point. Now I think from both a buying and a rent-to-rent perspective, it's making sure that you complete swiftly.
Yeah.
I think that's super important. I know, again, speaking from experience, our first property took us nearly 10 weeks to complete, and that was largely down to me having agreed a deal, but not having the resources to fund it. You know, thankfully, because the property had been empty for quite a while, there was a little bit of leeway in terms of the lead time. But I've learned subsequently that, you know, once something has been agreed, to make sure that there are no second thoughts, just make sure you've got your ducks in a row so that you can get it over the line quickly. I don't know, from a buying perspective, like I know that there's a couple of additional moving parts in terms of mortgages and, you know, drawdowns and the whole conveyancing process.
Valuation.
Yeah, which is something obviously we'll have a bit more of a deep dive in on a separate episode. But I think, is there anything else that you guys feel needs to be added from a completion perspective?
Yeah, it's going to take typically longer than you think.
Sure.
So as long as you know what's happening at every stage and you can communicate that to your agent or the landlord directly or whoever's in the equation, the happier people are going to be. It's never going to be fast enough for all concerned. And if it takes a long time because of various reasons, such as the surveyor can't go out for 3 weeks, for example, to value the property in a buying perspective, or conveyancing takes longer, or once one property I bought, which is before Christmas 1 year, and it took until the third week in January for the conveyancing to deal with the backlog over Christmas when they shut for 10 days to, you know, really process that the purchase. So things happen. But as long as you're talking, everyone's talking all the time, people generally are going to respect that. Not always, but generally. So that definitely helps.
Cool. Anything to add, Steve, before we wrap it up?
I think I'd like to just share a bit of wisdom that my dad gave to me when I turned 18. He said, son, there's three things that you need to master in life. The first one is how to get a bottle cap off a bottle of beer without a bottle opener. The second one is what to do when you're confronted with a bear and how to get out of that. And the third one, he said, is you've got to learn how to negotiate.
Sure.
So this negotiation is a life skill. And the honest truth is that we all negotiate every single day.
Mm.
How many of you have children that want something and they stamp and scream and make a fuss until you give in? Well, that's negotiation.
Yeah.
How many times, ladies, have you wanted to get your husband to go and do something and he hasn't wanted to do it? Brute force is an option, but it's more likely through negotiation. So we do negotiating all the time. But it's surprising how many mentees, when we talk about this type of thing, said, I've got no negotiating skills.
Yeah.
The truth is we've all got negotiating skills. And if you think you haven't got negotiating skills or you think that they need brushing up, well, there's this little thing called YouTube.
Yeah.
That is probably, in my opinion, the world's greatest learning resource.
Yeah.
If you put how to negotiate or basic negotiation techniques into YouTube, you'll probably get like a million videos on how to do it, varying lengths from like 1 minute to like 1 hour.
Yeah.
So just jump on YouTube and understand negotiation a little bit more, because that will stand you in good stead when you require it in front of your estate agent or landlord. Letting agent.
I think a good guy to watch is Matt Elwell,
who
you guys had amazing. PBN, right?
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I'm actually going to go on his course, I think, in November.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So that's all around negotiation and closing.
I've just realised one thing we haven't covered
is
walking away from a deal.
That is.
That's quite important. I know we want to give you the best case scenario,
but
the reality is not every deal will be a deal.
Yeah.
As we've talked about, whether it's rent or an HMO or
For those of you on the audio, you probably just wonder what happened. For those of you on the video, you've just realised what's happened.
So not every deal works. So part of negotiation, and this comes right back to the first thing we talked about, which is the numbers. You've got to know your walkaway point, as Steve mentioned. If a deal doesn't work, put the offer in writing. Walk and explain why that offer's in, why you put that offer in, whether you're doing buying or indeed doing rent or HMO, and walk away. But whatever you do, don't just leave it there. Go back in a week or 2 weeks or 4 weeks. It's called pipelining. Go back and reiterate to the agent or the landlord, if you're buying directly from a landlord or negotiating directly with the landlord, that your offer still stands. Because the chances are, if that property is empty for a long period of time, whether you're buying or doing rent or HMO, they might change their mind in the future.
Yeah.
So whatever you do, you're doing all the hard work, looking at the property, doing the viewing that we covered in the last episode, doing the analysis, and then putting the offer in here on this episode. Don't just leave it there if it's a no.
Mm.
Make sure, because it could be an amazing opportunity next week or next month or in 2 months' time.
Yeah.
Go back and reiterate your offer.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. Thanks.
Good point to end.
Thanks.
Cool. Look, we're going to wrap it up for this episode of the HMO Experience. Thanks again for watching and listening. Make sure that you leave comments and you like if you found the content in this useful. Give us questions. If you have any specific points that you want to expand it on, then obviously we can deal with those in our HMO hacks as well. And make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel where you can see all of our three beautiful faces. And if you want to continue the conversation, also like our Facebook page, The HMO Experience. The hashtag HMO Hacks that I mentioned are going to be on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So we're going to leave all of our social links in the show description. For now, thank you very much. Next Monday, we're going to be covering off what we're covering in episode 10. I should really be prepared for this. Offer a negotiation.
You're building up
system. I know.
Power team.
We're going to be dealing with the power team in the next episode. So for now, it's going to be goodbye from Jamie.
Bye.
Goodbye from Steve.
Goodbye.
And adios from me. See you later.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the HMO Experience. Don't forget that all of the resources mentioned in each episode will be available on our website, www.thehmoexperience.co.uk. We regularly update our website with new content to help you along your HMO journey. So make sure you check out www.thehmoexperience.co.uk for more details. Also, remember to join our online community by liking the HMO Experience Facebook page and subscribing to our YouTube channel.